All right, welcome back. This is Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. This is Sam Marcoux once again. I wanted to say real quick a thank you to Jay Williams from In the Galaxy podcast for the show last week. A lot of controversy, apparently, when you talk about the greatest American rock bands. But I got a lot of feedback, which is good for two reasons. Number one, it proves that people are actually listening to the show. And number two, it proves that Jay's list was completely wrong, while mine was absolutely 100% correct. So thank you for that feedback. Thank you for confirming that my list of the greatest American rock bands was accurate, while Jay's was dog shit. We did break ground. It was a history-making show in that Jay Williams did admit that he was doing the podcast in his underwear, which is a Predictably Drunk first. Quite frankly, wasn't the guest I expected to be in their underwear, not even the right gender, but you know what? I'll take what I can get. It's one of those bucket lists for the podcast. I had somebody in their underwear. This week, we're also going to have some controversy. We're also going to have some groundbreaking going on here, as this is the 21st episode of Predictably Drunk, which means this show is now legally able to drink, which is great because I've been drinking since episode one, much like my years. So I'm drinking once again the sixth glass quadruple ale out of, where the hell are these guys out of? Kansas City, Missouri. So if you happen to be going through the middle part of the country, the flyover states, you're doing the Chuckle Hut in Kansas City, stop by the Boulevard Brewing Company, pick one of those up. It's a nice big bottle. It looks like a wine bottle, actually. You look classy when you drink it. But my guest this week is actually a very funny comedian, and I want to make sure I say comedian and not comedienne, because we're going to talk about some stuff that's actually, even though we're going to have two very funny people on this show, might be a little heavy, a little serious. So I want to welcome in Steph Garcia, comedian. She is the Sacramento sweetheart. Is that correct, Steph?
Oh, sure. Totally.
Known as the Sacramento sweetheart. Steph Garcia is a comedian out of, if you haven't guessed, the Sacramento area. You've been doing comedy for what, about 11 years now, 10 years?
Yeah, 11 years this year, actually.
So I'm just going to read your bio, because I think your website from stephgarcia.com, which is her full name, by the way, says it best. So she's known as Sacramento sweetheart. You can see her perform solo and with the popular all-female group of talented, sexy comedians, the real funny housewives of Rio Linda. She regularly appears at the historical Laughs Unlimited in Old Town Sacramento, San Jose Improv, which is my home away from home, the legendary Purple Onion, Punchline Sacramento, Tommy T's, my other home from away from home, the historical Downtown Comedy Club in Los Angeles, Comedy Under the Stars, Fat Cat Modesto, and Your Mom's House, which is... My mom actually would probably love your brand of comedy, actually, so I should probably book you to go to my mom's house.
I would. I should probably update my bio. I have more credits than that, but that's okay.
Well, one of the credits you have that I didn't mention is you were on The View, the Barbara Walters show, correct?
Yes.
And I was looking for that clip. I couldn't find it. It must have been too funny, and they took it down. But I did look up some of your other stuff, and I actually posted on the fan site for Predictably Drunk, you just destroying a lady in the front row of one of your shows who was texting, and it was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
It's so annoying. That is the new way of heckling, too, is when someone just kind of tunes out and looks at their phone, and I'm not scared. I'm not scared on the stage. 11 years ago, I would not have done that. I probably would have looked right over her, but that's one of my fun favorite things to do is mess with people.
Well, and you're really good at it. I mean, first of all, Steph Garcia and I wanted to say that Steph and I met at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco, but that's technically not true. We met at the bar next door.
Yep.
At Cobb's. I had parked my car about 5 miles away because it's freaking San Francisco, and that's how close you can park to Cobb's and consider yourself lucky. Yep. And I was meeting my friend and podcast favorite, Jeremy Curry, who, of course, was going to be at the bar next door. And Steph, it was actually last November. It was the Thanksgiving Turkey Gobble Fest or whatever the hell it was called. And Steph was inside. And not only did I meet Steph at a bar, and immediately, anytime I meet somebody at a bar, being the host of Predictably Drunk, I immediately think we're going to be friends. But not only were you at the bar, not only are you a comedian who later I found out was hilarious, but you bought me a beer there, which is amazing. I think you're immediately my favorite person in the comedy industry. Jeremy's never bought me a beer.
I bought him one that night too. So
yeah, well, so there you go. You're probably Jeremy's favorite person too, other than maybe Kabir Singh. But
I'm around comics so much, and I know a lot of them are broke, and I'm not. I'm not because I have a great comedy career, but I actually have a full-time job. And so, you know, I always give back when I can. So, I mean, it sucks to see so many people, so many funny people struggling to even get out to a bar to do a gig, and they can't afford a beer. And I don't know. I just, if I can do it, I do it.
One of my favorite things to do is to call my comedic friends in the middle of the day and ask if they're busy, knowing full well that they're not. And I just do that just to be a dick to them. But that's me. I'm kind of a dick. The other thing that you did there, he's kind of we call him the green room comic, Jeff Koenig, who is a terrible, terrible comedian. I can't even call him a comedian. It's an insult to you and I and everybody else. But you actually sat there and tried to help him craft a better joke out of the horrible, horrible jokes that he has. But you legit, I mean, I was really impressed with you. It was almost like a motherly instinct to be like, listen, I'm going to help this lost soul try to find some funny in this, you know, humongous pile of crap that's coming out of his mouth. And I thought you had really good advice, and advice that I've actually retold to him multiple times since then, and he won't listen. And I think it's somebody, we got to put that foster child back into the system, I think. I don't think it's going to work. But that was really nice of you. That was very sweet, actually.
Thank you. I kind of am weird about giving advice, but if I think it can help, I always ask first. But I am kind of maternal. I'm a mom, though, you know. So, and my daughter is just a little bit younger than some of the comics out here on the scene. So I do. I get very motherly.
So when you started comedy in 2004, you were already a mother, right? You weren't already doing comedy, then became a mom.
Right. My daughter was 4 years old. She was just a month shy of turning 5.
So how did that happen? How did you, I mean, obviously you're a funny person, and that's proven with your TV credits and everything that you're doing. But what inspired or triggered you to finally get on stage and say, this is what I'm going to do?
I grew up loving Saturday Night Live, and I always wanted to be on the show, and I had a fascination with Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd and Steve Martin, who's my favorite. And I always told my parents I wanted to be on the show, And through whatever happened, you know, obviously that never happened. And I never really was encouraged to do that. I was always just kind of the class clown. And I always felt there was a bigger purpose for my sense of humor. I wanted to do something big with it. I wanted to be in the movies. I wanted to be a singer. I can't sing. Actually what happened was I started talking about doing comedy, and I was a sales manager and had hired some guy who did open mics. And so he heard me talking about it. He's like, come to this open mic at Laughs Unlimited. I'll put you on the stage. And I'm like, okay. And kind of joking around. And I didn't go for months. And he kept on giving me crap about it. And then I accidentally made the good mistake of telling my girlfriends, hey, I think I want to do comedy. And they looked it up, and they said, there's a competition in August of 2004. And they said, there's a competition for open mics. So go and enter. And if you don't enter, we're going to enter you.
Wow.
And so they drove out from San Jose and San Francisco to make sure I would show up. I showed up. And Jason Ressler was the host. And me and Mike E. Winfield and a couple other people did this open mic contest. And I came in second place. Crazy to me. Like, it blew my mind. But I'll tell you something. I practiced what I was going to say on stage, and as soon as the light went on, and as soon as I got my first joke, I heard the people laugh at my joke, I just have this weird, beautiful, overwhelming feeling of like, this is what you're supposed to do. This is what you want. And I never looked back. And it almost cost me my marriage, to be honest. I mean, I went full steam ahead. There was no social media. There was no internet. If you wanted time, you showed up at every single open mic you could for like 4 years before I even got a hosting gig.
Wow.
And my hosting gig was at Laughs Unlimited, and I hosted for a couple years, and then gradually I featured, and now, you know, I'm featuring there still, but I'm headlining other clubs, and it's been a long, fun road, and I don't regret a thing.
Well, I remember I hosted that night at Cobb's, and you know, when you're hosting and I like Cobb's a lot, especially kind of where the green room is and how you can walk directly to the stage and not have to talk to anybody in the crowd. That makes you feel, I mean, I know this is going to sound like an asshat, but it makes you kind of feel like a superstar in a way, because you are segregated from the crowd if you want to be. And the way the light works at Cobb's is it's right off to the right-hand side of the stage. So when you're hosting, a lot of times you're the one giving the light as well. And I remember giving you the light, and it was like a 1-minute or 2-minute light, whatever it was. and you announced to the crowd that you had to go, which, you know, a lot of comedians will say that's my time and they walk off. But you actually announced, hey, look, they're giving me the light. I got to go. And the crowd fucking booed. And, yeah. and not booed at you, but they booed because you had to go. Like, they were mad at me for giving you the light. And I mean, that's a sign that you were just absolutely destroying out there. And you were very funny. And I mean this in a very complimentary way. And I think it's going to dovetail into what I want to talk to you about. You were very funny, not only for a girl, you were just very funny, for a comedian. And there's a difference there. And well, there shouldn't be a difference there, but there is a difference there in the comedic community. You and I talked a little bit off the air about this, but one of the emails I got a lot over the last month or so is this whole Louis C.K. controversy. For those that don't know, allegedly what's been happening is Louis C.K., obviously just a megastar when it comes to stand-up comedy and TV and everything, has been basically taking liberties. I'm not going to get into the details, but he's been taking liberties with young female comics and kind of using his stardom to basically, I guess, do a power trip sexually over them. He's not raping them, but it's not good, the stuff that's allegedly coming out. And what happened is it sparked a big controversy in the Bay Area with the female comics and the male comics. It kind of opened my eyes as to the type of shit that goes on out there as a female comic, that you guys actually have to, you know, put up with some of this shit. I grew up with sisters. I grew up with a single mom. I have a daughter. I'd like to think I'm a little bit more evolved than probably my troglodyte male counterparts, but maybe not. Sometimes I think I have to check myself as well, because I'm a male, and sometimes that Y chromosome gets in the way. But I wanted to talk to you about this, for the simple fact that you are female and you are a comic, and I wanted to kind of get your take on this whole thing. Is this something that you are dealing with, or have you heard stories of other lady comics that are dealing with this type of shit, sexual harassment?
I mean, yeah, I think it goes with, unfortunately, it goes with the territory. If any bar scene that a woman is going to work in, it shouldn't happen, but we are going to be sexually harassed. It's just going to happen. We tend to not be taken seriously unless we're, I don't know. It's hard to be taken seriously. You know, a guy, for instance, you guys are not judged. No one's going to look at you and be like, his set was funny, but man, he has a double chin. And you see the camel toe. And, you know, I wonder what it's like to fuck him. Like, no one has those things to say. Like, if you read, you had a nice compliment for me about how I destroyed a heckler in the beginning, and I'm proud of that video. But if you read the comments, they're not paying homage to the fact that I could handle that situation with wit and the spur of the moment and make the crowd laugh and not lose her as a person watching a show.
Right.
They were like, she's fine, I'd hit that. And it's like, you guys do not get that, number one. Number two,
we would welcome that, by the way. We want comments of, I mean, honestly, as a man, that would make us feel good, because that's how we're wired. But I understand what you're saying. No, we don't get that at all.
I've been in situations with bookers that have tried to get me alone, and it was my every red flag was going off in my head, and the skin, the hair on the back of my neck was standing up. I've been in situations where a pretty famous headliner before me getting on stage came up and didn't grab my ass, like groped my ass. I have been in situations where, you know, the headliner's talking to me and all he's doing is looking at and commenting on my breasts. And
wow.
This is the thing. I have a thick skin and I don't mind calling people out on it, but I will say it depends on their level of fame. I have played the, oh my God, you're so funny part. And then I just feel horrible afterwards, because it's like, you just played into him sexually harassing you. He's not going to listen to you on stage. He just wants to bang, you know, and it's just, you guys go and you're like, I got to do these jokes tonight. I'm going to do these jokes and then I'm going to get off stage and everyone's going to say how funny I am. I get off stage and I'm like, this was awesome. And now I'm going to go out there and hear about how pretty I am, or you're really funny for a girl.
Right.
I don't like female comics usually, but you were the exception. And it just infuriates me, but that is the stage that's been set in this industry. And I have never looked at myself as, oh, but I'm only a girl. Oh, but I'm the girl on the show. And I really get pissed off now when I'm introduced that way. If the first female of the night, the first lady comedian, it's like, shut up, introduce me. I'm gonna do a good job. And then it's just, I'm just a comedian. Now I do like, I'm kind of a hypocrite in a way because I like the word comedian, because that used to be a very complimentary term for people like Phyllis Diller and people like Joan Rivers. And, you know, it's like actor, actress. I don't see a difference. I'm not hung up on that word. I like it, but don't introduce me as your first lady tonight. Like, give this little lady an applause. I'm like, go fuck yourself. I'm fucking like,
well, and the truth is you're funnier than, so here's the thing. It is a boys club. It's very much like a sport, right? I mean, it's a male dominated industry, if you will. So, you know, sometimes you'll hear female comedians who say, look, I'm exactly what you said. I am the only female comic on the dais tonight. And that's happened quite a bit. I've been on many lineups, many shows where there's been one female comedian. And quite frankly, I, the way I look at it is that's probably what the ratio of men to women is. You might have, you know, it's probably more than 6-1, which is, you know, a lot of shows out there when you're showcasing. It's probably more like 15-1 or 20-1. I don't know if people necessarily go out of their way to say, look, we need to have more than one woman. I think they do almost do a token woman on a lot of these shows, right, wrong, or otherwise, but that's what they do. But that aside, I mean, you put the sex aside, you know how many bad male comedians are out there?
They're a dime a dozen. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, we're awful. I mean, we're not good. Most of us aren't good. I'm just now getting to the point in my career where I cringe from my set 6 months ago. And I'm like, what the fuck did I just say? Why did I say that on stage? Why would I videotape that and put that out to the public for consumption? That's awful, right? You know, but you're right. We don't necessarily that doesn't stick to us like it does to women. Like it's more of a, it's almost like a scarlet letter when a woman is funny. It's like, wow, like you said, they're funny for being a woman. She's funny for a woman. It's surprising in a way, which I don't think is fair. Like, I have an older sister who's hilarious. She'll never get on stage, but I could sit there and I laugh my ass off at the stories that she tells me. She gets herself into these scenarios that just blows my mind. And then I farm all the good stuff and I put it on stage for my own. And you know, people think I'm funny because of it. But, no, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of rambling a little bit here because of the drinking, but I really appreciate your honesty there, especially the part where you said, hey, you know, depending on who it is, I mean, it sounds like you've even kind of backtracked a little bit depending on who it is doing this shit. And I think that that's one thing that probably needs to stop moving forward if this is such an issue. And I'm sure you're not the only one. I know you're not the only one. That's,
no, I can see myself 10 years, five, six, 7 years ago, if I opened for Louis C.K. and he made a pass at me, I could see like taking the pass and being like, oh, that's so sweet. I'm married, but thanks. That's so sweet. And just playing nice in hopes that I'd get another show.
Right.
I'm not going to go fuck him. I've never fucked another comedian. I'm happily married. I've been married for 18 years to the same man. And I don't give off that vibe where, like, yeah, I would totally hit that. I've lost shows because of bookers that have made me feel uncomfortable, and I've just kind of gave them an attitude, and I'm okay with that. And I've warned other female comics of that. That is sad. However, I'm sure there are other female comics out there who think that by, you know, sexualizing themselves, they're going to get far. And the thing is, this is in the end, if you're not telling funny material and people aren't following you because you're funny, that's going to fade out. You know, it's like you can only see it at the top so much. I think every female comic that is out there right now in the spotlight, Amy Schumer, you know, Tina Fey, I'm mind blanking. I don't see where they've slept their way to the top. And if anything, Amy Schumer has been a pillar for rights for women on all, you know, on all facets. I mean, she's pretty amazing. I love what she's doing right now. She has a voice and she's making it funny, but she's making it known that the shit needs to stop, you know?
Yeah. Well, she had a great speech. I mean, it is about sex, but I think she won like Glamour Woman of the Year or something like that. And basically in her speech, she said, you know, I'm 160 pounds and I can get dick whenever I want, which is a very empowering statement, because, you know, male comedians, see, this is where, like, I almost kick myself a little bit, because I am so neurotic when I'm in when I'm on a show or like the day of the show that like I, you know, I can only think about my set. I can only think about how to craft a joke. I mean, okay, like how do I make the joke about my daughter being an STD funny, right? Like that's what I think about. I get on stage, I do my jokes, I get off stage, and then I immediately go into critique mode that I miss all of this extracurricular shit that's going on, which is why I'm talking about this now, is because, you know, my eyes kind of got opened while talking with fellow comedians about this subject and hearing these female comedians come up and say, yeah, no, this has happened to me. I mean, what you just said is not the first time I've heard that in the last couple of weeks. And it's very disheartening, especially as a father to a little girl. And like I said, having a single mom and two very strong sisters, not that my mom's very strong too, who would kick the shit out of me if they ever caught me doing anything out of line. And I just kind of like look up after I hear all this shit and go, what happened? I was trying to place a bet on the Tampa Bay Lightning. What the fuck just happened? And I miss all of this shit. So this is like news to me, which I know sounds really stupid in 2015, but, it really is. I mean, I've never grown up here in the Bay Area in that environment. I've never really been exposed to it. So, you know, that's why I'm talking about it now with you. So I appreciate you talking about it.
I'm really proud of the women who have come forward and I'm Louis out, if that's really what's happening. And if that's not what's happening and someone just has something out for him, I think it's absolutely horrendous. I think that I don't care who you are, once you lay your hands on someone and it's unwanted, it should be made known that you're a pervert. I mean, and it happens often, and there are touchy-feely comics out there, and I'm the first one to be like, hey dude, I'm not gonna hug you because I don't like your hugs. Like, I don't care if I hurt your feelings. I don't care if I don't get on a show with you. There's another show. And I think if adopting that attitude has helped me, I've seen a couple girls be completely, you know, just they thought that they would be one way and they would get on a lot of shows and it was like a month and then they were out and I've never seen them back on stage again. And that's really sad. I'm confident in my material. I'm confident, even if I'm doing some of the same material I've done for years upon years, and I build on it and I change it up and I do what I do and it works. And the thing is that's what I focus on. I have a job. I have two kids. I have a marriage. I'm very busy. So I don't get trapped in the bullshit and the gossip. I try not to. I always like to hear about it though.
Yeah. Oh, it's so much fun. I agree. I mean, there's a part of me that's talking about this right now. And my, like I said, my eyes are getting open and I'm like, wow, why am I having so much fun? Like, I can't get out of this wormhole of talking about this because it is gossip. And quite frankly, gossip is fun. I don't care who you are. I think when you can talk about stuff like this, or like who doesn't want to do that? Now we're talking to Steph Garcia, Sacramento sweetheart, if you will. Now you got a big show coming up on September 11th, which is obviously a dubious date in this nation's history, but you're going to make us feel better. You're at like now. Okay. Everybody who listens to this show knows who Kabir Singh is because I open for Kabir, all over the Bay Area, Reno. We've been all over the place together. I feature for him. You're going to be featuring for Kabir Singh on September 11th at the SAP Center, which is the Shark Tank. It's where the San Jose Sharks play, correct?
Yes.
That is awesome. That you're doing an arena show. Is this your first arena show?
Yeah, I'm so excited. And just to be clear, it's not going to be like Dane Cook where he gets in the middle of the arena and sells the entire arena out. I think they set it up so it's like a floor seating and then like some of the first concourse level is going to be sold. So I think it's going to be like 2,500 seats if I'm right. But still, oh my God, if we can sell that 2,500 seats out in my hometown, I'm from San Jose.
Are you really? Are you from San Jose?
Well, I grew up in the Bay Area. So I grew up in the East Bay in San Lorenzo.
My God. Are you a rebel?
No, I'm a Don.
Is that Arroyo Vista? Which one is that?
High school.
Wow.
And so from fifth grade to 11th grade, excuse me, I was in the East Bay. My mom worked for the San Jose Sharks before they were the Sharks. When they were just starting to talk about Bay Area hockey, I was in like eighth or ninth grade, and they became the Sharks between my 11th and 12th grade year. So we had to move to San Jose. So I started a new high school my 12th grade year, and I was there until I was 25.
How awful is it to move to a new town your senior year? Is that just awful?
It was horrible. It was horrible. I really lashed out. I acted out. I got in a few fist fights my first week. I hated it. I missed all my friends. I had a boyfriend that I met. You know, it was horrible. But looking back, it was probably the best thing that could have happened. And I don't know. It develops your character. That I went to 3 different high schools and 6 elementary schools. So
wow.
I moved around a lot. And so you know, you put on a different front each school. You just become someone that you they don't know who you are. So
right.
You want.
So it's funny you say that because I grew up, we moved around a lot, you know, and we're not a military family. We were broke. So we had to move when the lease was up.
Same here in divorce and the whole 9 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I went to school in San Leandro. I actually played Little League in San Lorenzo because my family is a lot of my family's from San Lorenzo. I'm going to talk to you off the air. You might know some of my cousins and you might have gotten in fist fights with them. And if so, I need to talk to them and you about this. We need to mediate this, but no. Oh, so I live in San Jose now. So that's why I brought that up.
Okay.
And I live right down the street from the SAP Center. So I think I'm going to come check you out on that day on September 11th. I think I'm going to come watch you do comedy.
I would love it. I always say, you know, I did most of my schooling in San Lorenzo and I made some friends that I'll be friends with for the rest of my life in San Lorenzo. And that was a big part of my childhood. But like, I really grew into myself in San Jose. I mean, I finished my senior year and then my mom kicked me out. So I've lived on my own since I was 17 and I hustled. I worked at the arena. I was a waitress and then I worked at the arena and that was my first real job. And through working at the arena, I met the publisher of Metro Newspaper at the time, is a weekly alternative news weekly out there. And he literally offered me a job, you know, on the spot. I'd been selling food to him for a few years and we were talking and he said, hey, do you think you could sell ads for my paper? And I go, I don't know. I've been selling you food for 2 years. You tell me. And he did. He's like, I love it. You're hired. And that changed my life. And I didn't finish college, but I will say those 5 years at Metro, I made some of the best friends of my life. I met my husband through friends I made there. I grew up as a person. I became something there when I had no reason to. They had every right to fire me at any given moment. But like, I grew up from age 20 to 25 at that newspaper. And so San Jose is just a huge part of me. I lived on East San Fernando Street.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, right downtown.
Right next to Peanuts.
Yes. Well, not.
So there's those two Victorians. I was right there on the corner of East San Fernando and I think 6th or 7th Street. And then I guess there's a City Hall now.
Yeah.
Santa Clara Street.
Santa Clara and 4th, yeah.
It used to be apartments. That building across the street where we were on the 8th story when I had my daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, so we lived there. And then the owners of the people who ran the Sharks ended up starting the River Cats. And they offered us jobs out in Sacramento.
The Sacramento River Cats, which is a minor league baseball team, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And because obviously, I mean, they were so good to us, the owner of the Savages. They were so good to me growing up as a kid and then with my husband. And they just loved him. And they're like, come work for the River Cats. And so that's my husband's dream job, to work for baseball. So we moved out here and it brought me out to Sacramento. And then through twist of fate, a lot of our friends moved out here also. And I love it out here. This is now my home, but I really love the Bay Area.
Well, you know, I'm not originally from California. I'm a transplant from a very young age to the Bay Area. So I consider myself a Bay Area person. Speaking of Sacramento, I will be at the Sacramento Punchline on July 12th. That's a shameless plug for me, but
I'll be there next week twice.
Okay, so there you go. So you got September 11th, which is a couple months out, which, by the way, if you're going to go to any show, go to a show that has Kabir Singh and Steph Garcia. Those are the two of the funniest people I've ever done comedy with. And I mean that. I mean that sincerely. That's a show you want to go to. I'm going to be there. I'm probably going to try to weasel my way backstage and just hang out with you guys, which...
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great time. The SAP Center, September 11th. What days are you going to be at the Sacramento Punchline next week?
Next Tuesday, the 23rd, and we're roasting DJ Singh.
DJ Sandu, not DJ Singh.
Singh, Sandu, whatever. Isn't that the same? Yeah, and then, sorry, DJ. He's like one of my buddies.
No, fuck it. You just roasted him right now. Screw him. Fuck DJ. Fuck you, DJ. You're not on the show.
We're gonna shave his beard on Tuesday. And then Thursday, the 25th, I'm doing a storytelling show with Carlos Rodriguez. It's his show. And
gotcha.
That's 8 o'clock, and a bunch of us are going to get up there and talk about health stories, and you know, because I'm super healthy. So, yeah.
Well, I think at least mentally, you're one of the healthiest human beings that I've had on the show. And so I wanted to talk to you. I'm a parent of a 2-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
You've got two kids. Yeah. You got into comedy once. I got it. The main reason I got into comedy, other than Jeremy Curry pestering me to do so, was the fact that I had a child and my social life just went away. Honestly, it went away once I had a child. So comedy was an outlet for me to get outside of my house again every now and then, and my excuse to have, you know, a job and of telling dick jokes on stage. So how did your children, your daughter was 4 when you got into it, but how do they deal with it now? Like, are they proud of you being a comedian, or how did that whole thing work? Was there struggles there? How did that go?
Yeah, there's a ton of struggles. I mean, I really have to divide my time between being a present mom and, fulfilling my dream of being a comedian for a living. I mean, being a mom is number one, and it's always going to be number one. And I've turned down a lot of opportunities because I want to be present in my daughter's life. This goes by quick, you know,
yep.
And that's worth it to me. And I've been really lucky and blessed to be able to work pretty consistently since she was 4. She's a freshman. She's going to be a sophomore now in high school. And it's cool. I'm the cool mom. I'm perceived as a cool mom. However, I'm probably one of the most strict moms in her entire group. My son now is 3. He'll be 4. And he doesn't care. He thinks the posters are awesome. If I bring home a poster or if I'm on the news I do some segments on Good Day Sacramento out here sometimes. And he thinks it's so wild that I'm on the news. So that's cool. But I mean, I'm going to have to really navigate through his life too, because I'm not getting any younger. And I had him, my kids are 12 years apart. We planned that well. kind of just happened that way, which I love, because,
you planned it through Star Wars remakes of some sort or something like that. Like,
no, I mean, our daughter, great. And then we were like, well, when we're ready to have another kid, we're just going to have another kid. And that was not in the cards. And what happened was we struggled with secondary infertility, and we struggled for 10 years, and it was more of a me depression thing, and comedy really made me feel happy on stage when all I really wanted was, I wanted one more kid. I didn't want my daughter to be an only child, and I struggled for a long time, and then I started to get healthy, and started getting shape, and I started to take care of myself, and through some twists and turns and a little bit of medication, I actually accidentally got pregnant. And I never looked back. I'll never regret it. But wow, I have a almost 16 and an almost 4-year-old, and it's crazy.
Well, so, shit, if you wanted an extra kid, you could have just called me. I would have been more than happy to rent mine out.
That's funny. A lot of people had a lot of advice for me, and I talk about that now in my comedy. Not always, but sometimes I do, and I'm testing it out a little bit, because infertility is something I'm really passionate about. I have some friends that are infertile. I have some friends that have experienced loss. I've had family members that experience loss, and it's something that people don't talk about. You know, it's that one. It's like a taboo subject. Like,
yeah.
And so, you know, if you say you're infertile, the first person that people want to solve it for you. Well, you could adopt. Well, when you stop trying, and I'm just like, you can go fuck yourself if you don't think I haven't thought of every single one of them.
Yeah.
How about just saying, I'm really sorry to hear that, and move on? Or I don't know what to say, and move on. Like, it's totally okay to someone who's grieving or someone who's experiencing loss or someone who is experiencing something big. It's okay to not have a solution.
No, sorry to cut you off, but I've mentioned that on this show. I find out a lot about myself when you're put in those situations where, you know, you're like, oh, how so-and-so? Well, they died 3 weeks ago. I just walk away because I don't know what the fuck to say to that. I'm like, you caught me off guard. This is your fault. I'm leaving. And there's nothing I can say that's going to make you feel better if you're going through a divorce, if somebody died, if you're infertile, whatever it is. Like you said, the reason I was laughing when you said people want to have solutions is because I've experienced the same thing. I've been the guy that said, well, here's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's one of those weird things, like, you know, as a guy that, you know, I'm slightly overweight. I'm not like a huge guy, but I complain about being bigger. And that's another thing. It's nowhere in the same category as being infertile. It's two different things completely. But, you know, if I tell somebody, yeah, I want to lose some weight, all of a sudden I have 55 people that want to tell me how to lose weight. And most of them are fatter than me. And I'm like, I can't talk to you right now. Like, no, just listen to me, bitch. And let's move on with our lives.
Yeah. don't walk away from people who tell you something in the moment, because it's a really vulnerable place to be in when you can actually tell someone what you're going through. And the best thing you could do is look them in the eyes and just be like, I'm really sorry to hear that. And then change the subject. Yeah, we don't want to talk about it either. But because you mentioned it, you know, I had a family member tell me one time, when are you going to have another kid? She was like, Daisy was six. And I said, you know, we've been trying and the doctors don't think I'm going to be able to have more kids. And she's like, oh, that's too bad. An only child is a lonely child.
Oh, fuck that.
It killed me, but it was like it's my fault. Like, my body's not working. That is not my fault all the time. And it really ended up being just a quick medical fix that I had not tuned into for years. Yeah, that part might be my fault, but man, the guilt that people have because their bodies aren't doing what they're naturally made to do, it's horrendous. And the thing is that I've had some success during doing jokes like that and giving the advice of don't say anything. If you don't know what to say, just say, I don't know what to say, and give me a hug. And
yeah.
And women have come up to me actually after the show and they are starting to really open up, and I love it. Like, it's like, good, I made you laugh. You know what I mean? Like, I can make you laugh about something that I know is so painful to you, and, you know, I don't know. That's my mission, is connect with other people, not just women, because men experience too. Connect with other people on real life situations. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's the basis of comedy. I mean, if you can take a real life thing that's going on and find the humor in it, people will respond to that more than, you know, a terrible knock knock joke or whatever, you know, whatever. So, no, you're onto something. I've seen you once. I've worked with you once. I think you're hilarious. I've watched your stuff on YouTube. I think you're funny. I mean, the way you handled that lady was hilarious. I'm looking forward to September 11th. I wish I could be there for the DJ Sandu roast.
You mean DJ Singh?
DJ Singh, yeah. Yeah, is it the Kabir Singh roast? No, I wish I could be there for that. I cannot, but I think you're going to do fantastic. I mean, you're just a hilarious person, and DJ's easy to roast. I mean, look at him. Look at the guy. I mean, that's enough material right there. Speaking of bad jokes, this is a segment that I do every single week. I probably get more fan mail for this segment than anything else. So here's what it's called. It's called the Best Worst Joke of the Week. You're a comedian, or a comedienne, if you will. I'm a comedian. You probably get told all the time. I mean, one of the things that I hate as a comedian is, oh, you do stand-up comedy, tell me a joke. I'm like, well, pay me $50 fucking, motherfucker, and then I'll tell you a joke. It's the worst, right? So the other thing that happens, like the second worst thing that happens, is people will tell you a story or they'll tell you a joke and say, feel free to use that. I'm like, oh, really? I can use your terrible bad joke on stage? That'll be great. Yeah. Right? So I've turned that into the segment. And what I do is when people send me a joke, I call them out on the show. I give them props for giving me such a terrible joke. And it's now something that I like. So here's how it works, Steph. I'm gonna tell you the joke, or at least the setup. If you know the punchline, go for it. If you don't, then, you know, I will say it, and then we'll mock the person together.
Okay.
So this comes from Mark Linville, who lives in San Ramon, California. He sent me this joke via Facebook, and he said, why did the lady keep calling the furniture store?
I don't know why.
Because she wanted more than just the one nightstand.
Oh, Mark.
Isn't that terrible?
That's horrible.
You know what I wish for Mark? I wish that he slides down a humongous razor blade into a pool of acid. That's what I wish for Mark, based on that joke right there.
He
thought that was funny.
Oh, that's not funny.
No, it's not funny in the least. I mean, I can't use that on stage. I mean, could you use that on stage in any? No, not at all.
Never.
It's the best worst joke of the week. So congratulations, Mark Linville. You have received nothing other than mockery from myself and Steph Garcia from StephGarcia.com, who you can see on September 11th at the SAP Center in San Jose, California, your hometown of San Jose, California.
All my East Bay friends get so mad when I'm like, I'm from San Jose. They're like, no, you're not. You're from San Jose. Like, technically.
So I went to high school in Dublin, California, and I claim San Jose, and they're like the same thing. Like, you're an East Bay rat. I'm like, nah, I'm down here with the technology motherfuckers.
Dublin?
Yeah.
You You know what? I went to San Ramon Valley High for a year.
Oh, that's a good school. That's like a college compared to Dublin. You can't.
Oh my gosh, it was like a sea of Barbie dolls. I was.
Yeah.
I hated it.
I may have gotten one or two girls pregnant from that high school.
No way.
No, I see, you even know my lies. That's not cool.
Yeah,
you,
no, these girls were so stuck up. No
way. They wouldn't go for a hood rat like you, Sam.
Hey, I showed up, no kidding, 10th grade year, I showed up new high school, Santa Rosa Valley High, and I had been going to Arroyo in 8th and 9th grade, and then I went to Santa Rosa in 10th grade, and I showed up with my hair, I was a hair bear, and I had on, like, British Knights, which we called bitch kickers.
Bitch kickers.
Yeah, and I showed up, and it was like, who is this female Eminem at our school where everybody's blonde and wearing flip-flops and has long, straight blonde hair and barely any makeup? I was like, where the fuck am I?
So, listen, you've been listening to Predictably Drunk. This is Sam Marcoux. This is smart people, very smart people this week, talking about very stupid things. Leave it to me to bring on one of the funniest people I know and talk about very serious subjects like infertility and sexual harassment. But, you know, hey, you know what? I actually think this is a very good podcast. Thank you very much for being here, Steph. I like I said, I kind of a last minute, I realized today was Tuesday. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm supposed to do a podcast. I don't have a guest. And you were one of the very first people that popped in my head. And you were there to say, yes, I will be there. So thank you very much for being here today. Yep. I know that the Golden State Warriors just won their first NBA championship in 40 years. Uh-huh. You needed to watch the game. I don't give a shit about basketball. nonetheless, I got to drink my beer. We got to have a great conversation. Check out Steph Garcia on September 11th at the SAP Center in San Jose, California. And you can also check her if you're in the Sacramento area. I have a following in Sacramento, actually, at the Sacramento Punchline on June 23rd and June 26th.
Yeah, I believe so. Next Tuesday and Thursday, 23rd and 25th.
Just check it out. If you're listening to the show, look down in the liner notes. I'll put it there. It'll be there. Steph, thank you very much. This is great. This is Predictably Drunk. Smart people talking about stupid things. Until next time. Oh, I should point out the worst announcement in the history of announcements. Jeremy Curry will be my permanent co-host on the video Predictably Drunk football show. I'm going to turn the volume down on him, but we have agreed on a sum of money, which is nothing. And, he'll be there every single week during the football season, which, Steph, you don't know this, but this show is actually what got me into comedy and gets me touring around the country. So, awesome. Yeah, my little YouTube show, it's kind of the little engine that could, I'm bringing Jeremy Curry on as my permanent kind of co-host.
Why? Which, you wanted to tank?
Yeah, I want to retire. I want to retire, and I'm not man enough to just quit. So I need my 100,000 viewers to go down to nothing.
So I'd love to do that show one time.
Steph, you're more. I've never had a female on the show, which goes back to our original conversation here. No, I listen. I've called myself out more than anybody else. I'm not necessarily the greatest guy. I like to think I am, but I'm not. So you're more than welcome to be on the show. Who's your football team? This is a big, we got a big sports.
Oh, God. 49ers all the way.
Oh, God.
I bleed red and gold. Yes, yes.
Well, you can't be on the show. No.
Tell me, are you a Raider fan?
No, I'm actually, without announcing too much, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. And the show is pretty popular with a certain football team. Which I cannot announce anything right now, but the tail end of this year, there's going to be a lot of fun stuff going on. So for the fans out there that can kind of read between the lines, I will be on the East Coast before too long.
It's good for you.
Yeah, but no, 49er fans are always welcome. I mean, I live not too far from that new stadium, which is cursed because there's Indian bones underneath it. But honestly, we'll talk off the air. I'd love to have you on.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, great. So this is Predictably Drunk, Steph Garcia, stephgarcia.com, September 11th at the SAP Center. The Shark Tank, Steph Garcia, Kabir Singh, a couple other folks. It's going to be funny. Get there. What else? You can find me, let's see, June 25th at Tommy T's, July 10th at the Fremont Summer Comedy Bash, July 12th at the Sacramento Punchline, July 15th at the San Jose Improv. There's a whirlwind of activity. We're very funny people. We have a lot of shit going on. Just go to our website, sammarkwu.com, stephgarcia.com. Figure out what show you want to come to and get there. We'll talk to you guys later. Smart people talking about stupid things. Thank you very much.